Hey, I think that there are, well, in fact, I do know for sure that there are some people that I don't really want help from. You know the type of people? There's some people that are just like, yeah, that's fine. Thank you very much. I will consider what you're saying, but I just really don't want your help. Yeah, and I think there's actually six people who I don't want help from, and there could be more. And I think it's time. There's times when you have to detach from them and leave their leave them. Ask them to leave your emotional room. And there's some people I'm just so wary of getting help from, or even suggesting others get help from. Look, they may be well-meaning, have good intentions, and a deep desire to help, but they really come up short on the wisdom side of things. Have you met people like that? Yeah, there's some people that are out there you just want to avoid. You know, in my book, So You Want to Help, I listed five helping type people that I would encourage you to avoid. And today I actually add a sixth. The first one is fundamentalist Fred. And Fred comes alongside and doesn't lighten the load, but actually adds to it. He lays down the rules, the principles, tells people, try harder. It's all black and white. You're either in or you're out, and there is absolutely no room for mystery. The second type of person is a super spiritual Sally. Okay, and it could be a super spiritual Stan. Okay, I'm not really getting being genderist here. It's amusing. Sally comes alongside with a big cheery smile on her face, but ignores the reality of what the person is facing. You know, she offers a few quick spiritual platitudes, tosses a praise the Lord here and there, and then she's off to the next person. You know, can I pray for you? Is offered before truly listening to the depths of what's going on. You see, it's just too scary and known and unknown for her to go there. She lives in a kind of spiritual la-la land with doses of woo-woo. The third type of person that I would be wary about is the rescuing Rachel. And Rachel, she just loves to help. She comes alongside, takes the burden off other people, and makes it her own. Isn't she just so caring? And she continues to carry and rescue without wisdom. She eventually becomes overwhelmed and exhausted. You see, caring does not mean carrying, and the servant does not need to become a slave. The fourth type of person is Program Pete. Oh, Pete, he's got the answer. He's got a course, he has a book, he has a lecture to give, and Pete comes alongside and informs you. He takes people to the course, he provides the information and says, just go and do it. Here's the answer. And he walks away in frustration because, in his learned opinion, people are lazy and they just don't want to learn. They don't want to do the hard work. And then there's number five, superficial Sarah. And she's quite like one of her other personalities earlier. But she likes to keep things on the surface, you know. If you're smiling, Sarah will smile with you. If you're not, she won't know what to do. Sarah is hesitant to talk about anything that might be difficult. She avoids the people who are an obvious pain. She likes happy endings and fairy tale novellas. And then there's a sixth personality, and this is the new one for me. I'm going to call him Blind Bill. You know, Bill has sight problems in that he can't see beyond the here and now to what could be. There is no compelling vision that excites or allures him to go deeper and be patient with the larger story being played out. His mind is actually quite stuck. Worse still is that he can be quite mocking and cynical of those that look beyond the present struggle. Look, there might be others, and there probably are, that you know of that are less than helpful. And perhaps you can actually see yourself in some of the ones I've actually already mentioned. But one of the enjoyments of reading the Bible many, many times is that you start to see little snippets and sentences which make you want to reread the story again and again. And so you start to see things that weren't quite so obvious in the first reading. And one of those stories is this Jesus story, where he came across a some people he chose not to seek their help or opinions. He was actually laughed at for his wisdom. Now let's read the story. It says, when Jesus had again crossed over by the boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. And then one of the synagogue leaders named Jairus came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "Look, my little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. And while Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader, and said, "Your daughter is dead," they said. "Why bother the teacher, Jesus, anymore?" Overhearing what they'd said, Jesus told him, "Look, don't be afraid. Just believe." And Jesus, he would not let anyone follow him to see Jairus except Peter, James and John, the brother of James. Now, when they came to the house of the synagogue, Jesus saw a commotion with people crying and wailing loudly. He went in and said to them, "Why all this commotion and wailing? The child's not dead, but asleep." But they laughed at him. And this is the punchline. After he put them all out, he took the child's father and mother and disciples who were with him and went to where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kumai," which means, "Little girls, I say to you, get up." Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was 12 years old. At this, they were completely astonished. And you can find that in Mark chapter 5. Look, I have this movie in my mind, in my imagination, where I see Jesus shooing out all these people out of the room. Yeah, a bit like a shepherd moving stray sheep that have wandered into a house. Come on. Yeah. Or maybe it was like herding cats, you know, chasing them around the room to get them out. Oh, look, some people want to be there for the show, the entertainment. Yeah. This, of course, was the synagogue's leader and his daughter. You know, you had to be there. But nothing great was going to happen while the room was full of critics and mockers. Nothing of astonishment was going to be seen while a bunch of blind bills were dominating the stage and holding the microphone. Jesus put them out of the room. And right then, that's when the healing started to begin. You know, and as I read and reflect on that story, I start to ask myself, who am I surrounding myself with? Who is in my room? Who really is not helping? And I think we need to ask questions from time to time. Who is in my room? Friends, family, neighbors, celebrities, writers, podcasters? What influence do they have over me? Do I give them too much sway? Am I trying to get something from them that they don't know how to give, like approval, love, recognition? Are others wanting to keep me in a box that I sense I am moving out of? Look, Jesus warned his followers about giving your very best to people who don't appreciate it. He described it this way: "Do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine. Or they will trample them underfoot and turn and maul you." And so often I find is you want to give out really good stuff and people just don't get it. They'll criticize you and knock you down. Those wailers and naysayers in the home of Jairus were trampling and mauling over Jesus' holy intentions. And look, nobody needs pigs and dogs sawing God's good work. So how do we put people out of the room? Well, I suppose it's about learning about lines of love and respect, you know, boundaries. Now, we need to prayerfully ask Spirit, Holy, to nudge you about those people that are in your room and not helping. And what emotional connection or bind do they have? What sway? Look, for some people, where there is little physical connection, such as celebrities, writers, etc., it's easy to unsubscribe, disconnect, and turn off. But what about if it's your spouse or a family member? Someone you can't just easily turn off. Well, Jesus actually offers us some wisdom about taxing people, and they are taxing people, aren't they? People want to tax your life, restrict it, and hold it back. And there's a story that some Pharisees and followers of Herod came to bait Jesus, hoping to catch him saying something incriminating. And they came up and said, "Teacher, we know you have integrity and that you are indifferent to public opinion. You don't pander to your students, and you teach the way of God accurately." You know, that's really, you know, we're buttering you up here. We know. "Tell us, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" And like Caesar was the dominant power. And so they're trying to trap him. And the passage goes on to say, he, Jesus, knew it was a trick question and said, why are you playing these games with me? Bring me a coin and let me look at it. And they handed him one. "This engraving, who does it look like and whose name is on it?" "Well, Caesar," they said. And Jesus said, "Give Caesar what is his and give God what is his." And their mouths hung open, speechless. Look, we give others what they rightfully deserve, love and respect. But that which is in the room called holy, beautiful, tender, and full of spiritual light in ourselves, well, only those who have earned the right to get in there to have a look are allowed in. I'm serious. Some people are not safe to allow into your sacred place. You know, it's about acknowledging your self-worth, that you have something both beautiful and impacting inside you. And then you quietly, and maybe not so quietly at times, kick out the stray dogs and greedy pigs. You know, when my kids were little, I used to read them this great story called Pigsty. And if you come over to the website, you'll be able to look at the YouTube version of the story. And it's the story of a little boy called Wendell Flitz. And Wendell Flitz's room isn't a mess. It's a pigsty. But Wendell's mother can't get him to clean it up. Wendell doesn't think the mess is so awful. In fact, he doesn't even mind it when one day he discovers a real pig sitting on his bed. Look, you see, Wendell didn't mind when the first pig moved into his room. They were friends, but then other pigs turned up and started to dominate and mess up his room. And here's a spoiler alert. It all started to change when Wendell took control, cleaned up his room, and the pigs didn't find it so appealing. They left. They were starved out, basically. Perhaps many of us have allowed pigs into the living room when they should be out back in the yard doing piggy things. Look, I think sometimes we need better friends. You know, we can't live in isolation. You know, cheerleaders and people who get you are crucial for your ongoing journey. You know, in seeking out the Jesus type people, those who deserve to be in your room, it's going to be slow and tender. You look for those who hold you in love and respect, no matter what they might discover. They ask gently curious questions rather than being quick to advise. Prayerfully, we need to ask for discernment about among the myriad of voices and people that come to us every day. You know, it actually takes time to clean up the pigsty, to kick some people out of the room, or to limit their effect. But you can do it. Here's some quotes to consider. Talks easy, works hard. Consistent, trustworthy behavior over time equals trust. Notice the word consistent is emphasized. Consistency is the key to the process. Stephanie Carnes. And if I'm not for myself, who is for me? And being for my own self, what am I? And if not now, when? Hillel the Elder. And I love this one from Anise Nin. And the day came when the risk to remain tight in the bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. Life is a process of becoming, a combination of states we have to go through. Where people fail is that they wish to elect a state and remain in it. This is a kind of death. Living never wore one out so much as the effort not to live. Life is truly known only to those who suffer, lose, endure adversity, and stumble from defeat to defeat. Perfection is static, and I am in full progress. Abnormal pleasures kill the taste for normal ones. Questions. Who is in your room and has an influence that is not helpful? 2. Why do some people want to keep you in the same box and not want you to change? And 3. What are the qualities of a Jesus-type person you want to have in your room? Look, I really hope that this was helpful, and that you can start to identify people that are in your room that may be having a negative effect on you. And perhaps you might like to email me, barry@turningthepage.co.nz. And just I want to say a big shout out. Thank you for those people who support me via Patreon and other means. You can even buy me a coffee, which is always very nice. And ways in which you can support what we're doing here is at turningthepage.co.nz/support. But perhaps you might like to email me and talk to me about what I've shared here. I'd love to hear from you, and it'll be good to have a good conversation. Okay, until next time, thanks. Bye.